This edition of The Stack was first broadcast from Berlin on Saturday, the 16th of March, 2013, on Monocle 24.
An editor-in-chief responsible for more than 400 books on design and considerably more, the German king of the exquisitely curated kiosk, and a tüte full of the best reading material in die Welt. Gather round, dear listener, edition 29 of The Stack is in Berlin. Also joining us on this special edition of The Stack is the co-owner of Berlin's best stock magazine emporium, Mark Kiesling.
I myself, of course, I need the paper between my fingertips, and I think most of the people that come in the store actually quite enjoy the selection in front of them, that they can touch it.
And we'll be joined by Robert Clanton, president of architecture and design publishing giant Gestalten. He has a thought or two on the value of committing your ideas to paper.
The fact that somebody actually put it on paper means that somebody thought that it really meant something. Somebody really committed to that piece of information, and I value that commitment, while sometimes in the internet it's not like that.
And we'll find out what's really shifting and shaping the market when we ask, what are people paying for to put in their totes at Do You Read Me?
It's Kinfolk. We got the new issue yesterday, so it's brand new and it's one of our famous magazine.
All that and a few good coffees today on edition 29 of The Stack, coming to you from the reading room at Do You Read Me in the heart of Berlin, here on Monocle 24. Hello from the heart of the German capital, and welcome to this very special edition of The Stack. I'm Tyler Brulé. I say special edition because of all the countries we could broadcast from, none has a more vibrant and complete newspaper and magazine market than Germany. Before boarding the intercity train from Frankfurt to Berlin, I spent a good 30 minutes at the Hauptbahnhof's main branch of kiosk operator Schmidt & Hahn. It's not the most beautiful or innovative retail format, bright lights, standard fixtures, and functional graphics, but then it doesn't have to be, as it has something of a monopoly on the business of selling papers and periodicals. In other markets, monopoly would spell mediocrity and limited choice. Not so at Schmidt & Hahn. Covering an area fit for a grocery store, Schmidt & Hahn, and there are many at the station, had an exhaustive array of print from across the German-speaking nations to the rest of the world, from regional farming magazines to think tank journals on counterintelligence to spin-offs from established German weeklies to a massive pet section. The emphasis was on offering the shopper choice rather than efficiencies. While all the sure bets were stacked high around the cash desk, the mountains of titles were also peppered with other magazines readers might like to discover. I boarded the train with two fabric bags packed with tons of magazines I wouldn't have found if the shop had just been managed by stocking bestsellers, and I thought how very different and depressing the experience is if you have to board a train in the UK or a plane in the US and Canada. So what is it about this market and its love of paper? Let's meet our guests around the table here in our pop-up studio at Do You Read Me's reading room. Well, joining us around the table, well, I actually shouldn't even say it's certainly not my table. It's the table, I believe anyway you own it, Mark Kiesling, who's the co-founder of Do You Read Me. And we're sitting in a space which you, I guess, opened up about 18 months ago now,
yeah.
a reading room. We're sitting across from a destination that many of our listeners would probably know, Andreas Mercurtis's wonderful store. I guess he was the pioneer in the neighborhood. You didn't come along too far, wasn't too far after. It's been about 5 years for your business now. You've probably defined yourself as one of the really the most interesting retailers of periodicals, and it's even hard to say retailers, but I don't want to overstate the point. I mean, you are in the business of selling great magazines. What was the genesis of the idea? Did you see something happening on the German newsstand that convinced you that there was room to Do You Read Me? What were the forces?
Let's say what was happening on the German newsstands was actually the lack that something is happening. So we actually thought that there is a lot of potential for especially international publications as well, but as well German publications that are not so on the market, in the mainstream market, that are more niche publications that normally just lie around on the floor in bookshops. So we thought, well, just why don't we turn it around and open like not another bookshop, but a magazine store. And we carry as well books, but we focus on the magazines. So this was actually kind of the idea, and it worked out quite well. So.
Quite well. I was going to say 60 months on, and you've really been through a fascinating time, because part of the focus of this program, of course, is we are really chronicling where the print industry sits. And, you know, books are one side of it, and we'll be talking a lot about books with our next guest as well today. But certainly the place that periodicals sit in at the moment. Is it as you predicted when you went into this? Did you think, you know, I'm entering this business because there's really room to be more specialized? Has it done better than your perhaps business plans? Was there a business plan?
No, we had no business plan. And I think this was as well an advantage, because if we would have one, or would have had one, we would have maybe never done it, because there's a lot of troubles we actually didn't face in the beginning, like more like a distribution problems, or to get actually hold of magazines that are niche publications, because there's often people that actually don't know how to do business, but they just do a magazine and they want to do that. So they have no idea about distribution as well. And it's completely different to the book market, for example, where you have like fairs that you can go to, then you have distributors, you have people that actually want to sell a kind of an assortment of publications. And with magazines, it's completely different. There's like a monopoly in Germany, like one company.
Most markets, but anyway.
yeah, but there's, yeah, it's kind of difficult because you have to go through this. It's like either or not. Like, and the most newsstands are delivered by the same company. So what we tried is like to get around this, or to build something that is like more special, and publications that they didn't even know about. So we had actually to build it up like all on our own, which was good in the end, very good.
Well, I want to talk a lot about where you've ended up as a business, and maybe, of course, some of your plans as well. I also want to welcome a second guest around your table, Mark. And Robert Clanton is the founder of Gestalten. He's a voice you've probably heard many times on Monocle 24, and a face you've seen in the magazine, of course, our current German edition, which is on newsstands for the moment, but coming off very soon. And I should probably say as well, Robert, in the interest of full disclosure, that we're also working on not just one project with you, but two projects. And I think it's become sort of a poorly kept secret. So, but we can probably expand on that more today as well. But thanks for joining. And there's a book sitting on the table in front of me right now, fully booked, Ink on Paper, Design and Concepts for New Publications. This just had a premiere a few nights ago, correct?
Yeah, yesterday night it was launched at a little space in Berlin, and we did a little exhibition with it, and it took off quite nicely.
What, tell us the notion behind this book, and I think what's really interesting about when you look at the Gestalten catalog and some of the books that we've even been selling through our own shops and retail channels, is that you're a chronicler of print, and so, you know, and some would say that it's sort of a niche within a niche in this market right now. But do you feel that you want to be an active participant? And, you know, I guess in two sides, because you're doing packaging, and you know, you look at and then a book like this one is well, which becomes very much sort of an active dialogue as to where we sort of sit in this paper moment right now.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we took a certain tongue-in-cheek approach to it. We said, yo, you know, let me state for the record, the internet is not dead. Digital will not kill, will not disappear, will not, and so what we tried to do is really sort of get out of this sort of defensive position and really sort of go out and not really sort of whine about the whole publishing industry going downhill, but really show that there's a lot of opportunities in working with this media, and show that a lot of people are really sort of using this media to work in a very, very creative way and communicate their values and their ideas to other people. And that is what we try to focus on.
In asking Mark about the notion of setting up Do You Read Me, and you know, clearly you've ended up in a very interesting position, Mark. Do you feel, Robert, that you've chosen the right path by going down more of a pictorial route, that there's a certain sense of being bulletproof, as you know, that you're not in the, let's say, the fiction market of doing pocketbooks. Do you wake up every morning and think, oh, thank God, I'm really not that bothered by what happens with e-readers, because who knows? I can't look into the Apple, Samsung, HTC crystal ball, but I can't really imagine that fully booked ink on paper is going to ever be something that I'm going to want to look at off a backlit screen.
Yeah, you're totally right. But I think what people do not really understand is that the digital book market is 2% of the overall market in Germany, for example. It's 2%, so it's nothing. And at the end of the day, people always think it's the media, but it's not the media, it's the behavior that changes the market. So people are not really sort of replacing an e-book, replacing the real book, the hardcover, with an e-book, not at least in Germany, but what they're replacing is the time they spend on reading and the time they spend with a certain topic. That changes quite a bit. And so those guys really having problems are those guys who were heavily into paperback and into cheap sort of mainstream ideas, because they have gone to the internet and gone to digital and so on and so forth. But I think with other content, you're still in quite a bit of a position to expand your business. And so it's definitely depending on what kind of content you have to offer.
Mm. We're sitting in a city. You have a retail presence, Mark. You know, you've gone for a bricks and mortar setup now with two locations in the city, albeit one sort of operates the one we're currently sitting in only half of the week. One can go online. There's no shortage of sites which are out there as well where you can go and purchase magazines. But this notion of browsing, we talk about this being a reading room as well. Was that sort of fundamental for this, that you have to, even sample to be able to encourage purchase? Because yes, I'm looking at the screen in front of me. I can go and do a digital flip on something. Do you think is that persuasive enough as a tool, or do you still need to have the paper between your fingertips?
I myself, of course, I need the paper between my fingertips, and I think most of the people that come in the store actually quite enjoy the selection in front of them, that they can touch it like every single magazine, and that we as well have the chance to like daily change the behavior as well of the people coming into the store, because we can just put one magazine next to another and maybe he's just grabbing it like actually he didn't think about grabbing it. And so this is really things we can do much better in the store. And it's of course as well, let's say, the direct response you get. You can talk to other people, you can show it directly. They can ask us questions, we can tell stories, or they tell us the stories, because most of the people that come to our store, they really do know a lot about print and publishing and so on. So it's like a real direct exchange. It's more like a meeting place as well. And this was as well the reason for this reading room here, because the shop in Auguststrasse was getting too close, because of like more and more publications coming in. And so we thought about, why not open a second space where we can have like really an event space as well, where we can have like exhibitions around publishing and talks and presentations. And it's like the same idea that you have in the Gestalten space. So so that really the print comes to life as well, and you have a real opportunity to meet the people and talk about it and not just look at it on the screen, because this is... I think you can maybe choose different things online. You can browse as well. But another thing for me is when I sit like 8 hours in front of a screen, I don't want to read the magazine or the things I enjoy actually on screen as well. So I'm really happy that I can just lay back and relax.
You raise a really fascinating point, which oftentimes I spend a lot of my time, of course, out talking to various media agencies and people who are, of course, you know, major advertisers in our brand. And it's very hard to convince people that, just as you say, that you sit in front of a screen all day, and you know, we talk about, you know, who our readers are, and we meet lots of them, and we hear time and again the same thing. People say, you know what, I have a device, but I'm a trader, I'm working for Deutsche Bank, or I might be an air traffic controller working at Zurich Airport. I'm on a screen all day, and my leisure time, I think, as you know, Robert, as you were saying, is how do people consume, and what is their interaction with me? They don't want, you know, light sort of glaring at them, you know, again through a you know, a screen. And yet, do you sometimes feel, Robert, that we're being sort of channeled in one direction, and whether it's sort of the makers of these devices or the companies that sit in between who are delivering them, are coercing us into one direction when, in fact, a lot of people don't want to be there. But yet, nevertheless, we're getting herded somehow.
Yeah, maybe, but I think I think we can't really blame it on the makers. I mean, we have to blame ourselves for the way we communicate and how we sort of look into information. And I think that there's just different ways of trying to get on top of a certain topic or getting informed. And, you know, a lot of these portals offer great content and doing research, and you find the information and you find a hotel room and you find the airline and you find all that. So books couldn't deliver that with it at the same speed and the same quality. So that's great. But on the other side, look at just a long form text, and I want to read a whatever 40,000 character essay by somebody who really sort of writes about something, and I don't want to read it on screen, not even on an iPad. So the only way that I want to read it is on paper, because of two reasons. First, still, I find it more convenient and better to read it on paper and sort of take my time. And on the other side, I also think that the fact that somebody actually put it on paper means that somebody thought that it really meant something, because people spend money on putting on paper and taking the hardship of physical distribution and so on and so forth. So I feel that somebody really committed to that piece of information. Mm. And I value that commitment, while sometimes in the internet it's not like that.
I like how you use the term hardship of distribution, because I think we all live it. And Mark, as you were saying, you wanted to, you know, some way, you know, also overcome and maybe help the consumer around the constraints of these monopolies, which are in charge of getting most magazines out to newsstand. Do you think that physical retail for at least this segment of the market, and of course, I think everyone would know that when we're sitting in an environment like this, we're not looking at supermarket magazines. These are rarefied, at least not, well, many are rarefied, limited print run, labors of love, that they need these types of environments. But I was going to say, likewise, Robert, you know, as well, books too. I mean, the challenges surrounding books at the moment, you know, we've seen other publishers, you know, dip their toe into, of course, having their own retail spaces, which seem to be doing well. It's interesting what you were saying about your numbers here. Do we move into a market where more publishers are going to have to be taking this into their own hands and having your own titles, but at the same time, I guess, like Mark, also helping out, you know, helping out as many people as possible? Robert, to you first.
I think the main problem with the publishing industry is not the media. The main problem with the publishing industry is the distribution environment. You're having less and less accounts. In America, you know, Borders going bust, independent bookstores have been going down until, I think, last year dramatically. So it's very complicated for somebody to just have that kind of personal interaction with content that you have here in this reading room. I mean, you get to see, you pick something up, you look at it. And actually, that is something that doesn't really happen in too many places anymore. As what is the substitution? The substitution is Amazon. And Amazon, everything looks the same. And you have a cover, and then you may sort of scroll down and read, oh, this has 400 pages. Oh, this other book has 40 pages. Oh, I wonder why it's the same price or whatever. Just, and in a store, you see that instantly, and it feels different. You feel the level of quality, you see it. And that kind of experience, or that just the fact that this experience goes away, is much, much more a bigger problem than the fact that the media paper is under attack by whatever digital readers, I think. Mm. So it's a problem of the outlets.
Maybe not giving too much away, Mark. Does the story begin and end? I mean, you've got... I was going to say, does the story begin and end in Berlin? And I know you were saying earlier before we went on that you've done things with Art Basel in Miami. You have a presence in Weil am Rhein with Vitra. Do we see this? Do you read me potentially having? Yeah, I mean the same type of playing the same type of role. You know, and you have competitors in other cities. Or you're not, let's say, unique in doing this. But could you see yourself taking this on the road elsewhere in a more permanent circumstance, or is it, as Robert's saying, you also need that same level of passion and interest in every location? And as we know, that's not always easy to find in a retail service-based business.
I mean, we've been asked, let's say, like quite at the early stage when we've been opening, that if we want to have another outlet somewhere. We've even been offered spaces somewhere that we could go in for free and try things out. And we were very, like, let's say, tempted in the beginning, because it was, wow, why not? It's a one in a year chance, maybe, and let's just do it. And but in the end, we asked ourselves, and it was really good that we asked ourselves, can we really do this with the same level of quality? Because we had a lot of problems to face in the beginning, and we still have. So it's the storage, it's the shipping costs, it's the people, of course, which is the most important thing. Then when you have another store, so. It was about, okay, who if Jessica or me moving there to set it up for a year or two, and then you need to find some like really good people for the shop there. And so we, in the end, we said, no, let's just not do it. Maybe we do some temporary spaces, which is okay. Now we have this satellite store, as we call it, with Vitra in Weil am Rhein, where we only have like a selection of 50, 60 titles that is... picked out by us and selected for the exhibition that is held there. So now it has an architecture focus. Before, it was about art and pop art and design, and it's quite controllable for the people there as well. But to set up like the same store somewhere else, I don't think that we can do it in the end with the same kind of quality. Mm. So not soon.
We're going to be coming back to, well, maybe this discussion about distribution, but certainly I want to, after the break, talk a little bit about this peculiar and wonderful market that is called Germany. You are listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24. We're going away for a very short break. We're back in a moment.
At 1800 hours London time, tune into Midori House, the hour-long show that lifts the lid on the daily workings at Monocle's HQ. We delve deeper into the stories of the latest issue of Monocle and catch up with our editors and correspondents on the road as they put together the next one. Tune in at 1800 hours London time and finish the working day with Midori House, live every weekday.
And you're back with this very special edition of The Stack. We are coming to you from Berlin today, from the reading room of Do You Read Me? And I'm joined by co-founder Mark Kiesling and also Robert Clanton of Gestalten Books. Gentlemen, at the start of the program, in my intro, I talked about just going into a rather unremarkable, yet remarkable at the same time, kiosk at Frankfurt train station, and just the breadth and range of publications. Okay, not as specialized as what you have here, but nevertheless, you could have 50 titles on, you know, sorting out your garden for springtime. There was, of course, all of this sort of Landliebe, Landlust, all of these things about, you know, you've done well in Germany, now become a gentleman farmer. There was a new magazine out from Stern, not to mention, of course, the relaunch Stern as well, but a magazine called Viva, which is a spin-off about, you know, living a great lifestyle after you're 55, et cetera, et cetera. It was, to me, someone who spends a lot of time all over the world, what is remarkable when I'm in the German market is just this extraordinary love of print that still exists. And I think many people can bemoan what's happening here. But we just, you know, in the United States, and I think of a lot of the markets that we spend time in, Australia, United, you know, UK, etc., you just don't see this the same love of paper right now. Robert, you talked about a 2% uptake when we look at e-books right now. And so I said before we went to the break, this peculiar but wonderful place called Germany. What are the forces or peculiarities that keep sales in this 2 to maybe 3% region right now? What is it about the German reader?
I think, first of all, Germany is one of the countries where you still have a fixed price system for books, which means that if you order a book from Amazon or go to your local bookstore, it costs the same. So that, I think, is a major ingredient in the fact that there still is a German book and publishing market. Certainly, I mean, to a certain extent, you see the same problems that people are the chains are having in America, in Germany. You see Thalia going downhill, pretty much like Borders went downhill, or just have problems with Hugendubel and so on and so forth. So it's not that these chains or major outlets are unaffected, and they try to sort of replace that with more mainstream and more banal products and trivia and all that. Which didn't really work. But at the same time, you also see a specialized store like the stores that Mark is running, or you see bookstores specialized in other themes, whether it's history or sort of thriller literature or whatever. And what these guys managed is to somehow attract a certain community of readers and manage to keep them interested and attached to the concept and also to the media. And I think that is something which some German bookstores do particularly well.
Mm. You know, there is something, you know, a little bit remarkable about, I think, still what's on offer in this country and in a very positive way, just the sheer number of newspapers and newspapers of quality. And we will talk about our newspapers in the UK, and people will talk about their New York Times and the Wall Street Journal in the US. But here you have, you know, again, you know, a series of what would be called regional papers, but I mean, you know, the Süddeutsche Zeitung, you know, pushes like a national, as does the Frankfurt Allgemeine, etc. And is there something, does one look back at the education system, how one is, you know, conditioned, maybe not in every household, Robert, as well, that partly plays into it, because somehow, you know, all of these companies want to make a profit, but, you know, I'm sure if an analyst went in today, they would say, well, you should go and cut 90% of this. That would be the conventional McKinsey way of going and looking at it, but maybe a smarter hand would also argue as well, you know what, balance up and do the reconciliation at the end of the month, but maybe you're still doing better if you can surprise people, and maybe they will actually add 2 magazines when they come in, not by just getting, you know, the known quantity when they walk in.
I think maybe going back a little bit to what you asked before, what is different, what the mentality here is that make people think or appreciate these things in a different way. I think what is maybe remarkable is that some people really believe in what they're doing, and they do not really think that if they just hit something, then they have to just be a millionaire the next year. And they're not just so super ambitious about, you know, making this one idea or something, turn it into a corporation or so. But a lot of people really sort of feel reluctant about, you know, losing control of the business that they sort of developed and try to keep it mid-size, try to make a living, try to pay their employees well, but maybe not sort of try to blow it up and bring it to the stock market, not as much as other people would do.
We often talk about the strength of the Mittelstand in this country, these, of course, small to mid-size enterprises, which are such specialists. And a part of that, when you speak to people who are really at the core of the Mittelstand, is this long-term view as well. So, Mark, do you think also maybe what we're seeing in print retail and in print media right now as well is part of a longer-term view to perhaps not be too scared by everything that's happening in digital, saying, you know, we'll stick with our guns and we're really looking over the horizon. And I think people often talk in German terms about things are really generational, and it's not thinking just to the next quarter. And I'm wondering if you think part of that plays into this.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's kind of the reason why we didn't open the second space, or let's say another in another city. The same thing. And even with opening this one, we said, well, it needs to be a different kind of size. So because we don't want to make our own. Like Robert was saying, I think really that's not only about failure, but about keeping control, that you can control what you're doing, and that you are really kind of owning what you're doing, that it's your own thing, and people don't talk into your business as well. So if you have somebody that gives you the money, they talk into your business, and Germans maybe don't like that much. So. And they're kind of stubborn as well, maybe. So,
if the world hasn't noticed.
Really? I know, maybe they are stubborn. But and they really, if they really like what they do, they really tend to get good in this as well. So they are really kind of a lot of training. And
There's a number of magazines sitting on the table. We're going to go away for a short break because we should probably dive in, at least between the covers of these titles. We're talking to Mark Heeslin, co-founder of Do You Read Me, and Robert Klant of Gestalten, and this is a special edition of The Stack in Berlin. We're back in a moment. And you're back with The Stack here on Monocle 24, a special edition of the program. We are coming to you from the reading room of Do You Read Me here in Berlin. I'm talking to Mark Heeslin, the co-founder, and also Robert Klanten, the founder of Gestalten, also our co-collaborator. I could almost say he's also my editor now at the moment, because we're going to be embarking on a project. We should probably talk about it for a minute in the interest of some self-promotion, that we're working on a Monocle book, which is going to be focusing on the topic, one which is very dear to our hearts, which is really life improvement in the broadest sense, making cities work, and what is good government, and maybe how can one grow old gracefully, all of those things that are quite important, and at the same time we're working on something with our sister agency as well. I hope you're excited about them as we are.
I couldn't be more excited about it, really. I mean, it's a beautiful venture, and being a follower and a fan of Monocle and ever since wallpaper came to the market, I think I always wanted to do something with you guys, and you have such a unique approach, and I think you introduced something that I feel very strongly about, which is a kind of something sophisticated, democratic. So in a way that is sort of not very elitist, it's about real people. And I think that what you have in mind for the book is really sort of capturing that spirit and just putting it into one place and being very unique. And so I think I'm very much looking forward to the publication.
It actually sounds like you created a new political party in Germany, the SD party, the sophisticated Democrats, which we could look forward to in the next election. I want to just play a short clip. We sent our producer, Don Trump, around to your... the original branch on Augustrasse, to go and have a listen to what's flying off the shelves at the moment.
So I'm Jessica. I'm one of the co-owner of Do You Read Me? And we are now in our shop in Berlin Mitte. And if you like, I can show you one of our bestsellers. First, it's Kinfolk. We got the new issue yesterday, so it's brand new, and it's one of our famous magazine. I think because of the design, the paper, and the content. So both is interesting, and people really like it because it's about spending time with friends and what they should do. The other is The New Gentlewoman. Of course, maybe you know it. It's the sister publication of Fantastic Man. It's also the new spring-summer issue. And I think it's one of the most interesting fashion magazine, because also the texts and the readings are really interesting, and not only have good photos, so also something to read. It's Beyonce on the cover. It's funny because the issue before had Angela Lansbury, and now we have Beyonce. So really two different kind of famous women.
Are there any German publications that are doing particularly well?
It's called Das Buch als Magazin, the book as a magazine. It's brand new, and they have texts from Kafka and new texts from different kind of authors about the text, and it's going very well, and it's a really nice idea, because doing a book as a magazine, it's totally different, because normally you say, okay, the book is the best, and magazines, okay, magazines, and now they're doing it another way. Or The Weekender, it's one of also our famous sellers, it's from Cologne. It's the winter issue still, it's quarterly, and it's also about really nice stories about people, what they're doing, how they live, how they work, and yeah, it's nice because it's a really small team behind the magazine, around about 4 or 5 people, and they're doing everything by their own, and it works.
Yeah, so that's what's selling on Augustras at the moment. Mark, you've got a couple of titles there in front of you. I can see you've got, I think, Actes is from Toronto or Montreal. I believe it's a Canadian title.
It's a Canadian title. Yeah.
Do we want to start there? And I can see, I mean, within the glass beyond us here in the reading room, you have a pretty big lineup of titles. There's this new generation of cookery publishing right now. I guess maybe the first question, because this is a rather niche show, and we've touched on it once or, you know, 1 or 2 times. Are we getting to the, I mean, you're seeing a lot of things before they come out, or of course books are just, or magazines are just arriving because someone's developed something new. Are we coming to the end of this trend? You know, I sort of wonder how much longer can we have another special food magazine come out in an A5 format? And as much as I love them and I buy all of them, are we getting to the tail end of it, or does this sort of mark a unique place where we are in our popular culture at the moment?
Well, this is a good question, and we ask this ourselves as well quite often. But it's really when we think it goes to the end, there always comes another publication that maybe goes more into detail. So they are even specializing more and more and more. So when we, for example, 5 years ago, when there was like Appartamento coming up, which was like an everyday interior magazine, so they really looked inside the normal people houses and flats and talked about what they eat, where they go, where they spend their time. And now we really see that it's going in kind of, say, the single topics they are picked out, like eating, meeting friends, going for a ride with your bike, going into nature, plants, and so on. So now it's going really into detail, and there's really good publications coming out that are like every different aspects from like acquired taste, where they talk with chefs, for example, from all over the world, and about their everyday, how they spend their day and what they have to do, and who they meet, and so on. So their concepts behind, and this is something else. So now we have, for example, the work life is getting more and more important as well in magazines. So there are some magazines that are only about work, like how you spend your daytime, like Day Job magazine, for example, or Off Screen, where they talk about people that normally work on screen, like for media, and what they do when they're not on screen. Or there's a new publication called Kindling, which is about parents, of course. So
yeah, we covered this some weeks ago on the program out of Brooklyn. Barrett Austin did a story about it. It's interesting how also you become sort of a focal point globally for all of these magazines, because you talked about sort of, you know, the hobby market, and in so many ways these are, not saying that having children is like a hobby, but some would maybe say otherwise. Nevertheless, it's they're kind of like these almost neo niche hobby magazines, in just given their sort of their deep focus. Yeah. What do you think that is? Is it because maybe when, and you were talking about the fashion magazines a little bit earlier, you said that a lot of people think it's, you know, this is it a case that the topics are being covered again and again, and maybe this is a reaction to that, because, you know, in fact you might sort of reveal your warts much more easily. I think when you're single topic and narrow, it's a little bit easier to perhaps pull the wool over someone's eyes if you're a broad-based magazine every month.
Well, I think what we really have at the moment is that publishing of course, it got quite easier with you can print wherever you want, you have your computers and so on. So now making the niche publications is kind of easy. So if you have the idea, you actually can do it quite easily with your network, with your friends. And so at the moment, there's... when before, like, I don't know, 10 years ago, if you had, like, interesting magazines, it were mostly about fashion or music, normally. And now it's really going into the smaller parts, so...
Robert, you did, on the food side, the title, was it Delicate? Was the... was one title in a way that almost chronicled this movement. And I'm wondering, maybe not giving away too much of what the forward catalog looks like, but is this an area that you continue to dabble in as well? Or when it comes to food and drink, is it a domain that you feel belongs to more specialist publishers? Or
I think food and drink has been picked up by a young creative generation, not necessarily a generation of people coming from hospitality and food and beverage sort of background. So people who used to be designers now start up their whatever popsicle store or whatever, or they do licorice or something like that. So they start bringing new ideas into something which has been very, very established and very industrialized. If you look at the food industries and all the scandals, I mean, you couldn't be more embarrassed about the environment of producing food in general. So in a sense, you have that counter movement of young people then picking up certain trait, a certain skill, and making a business from it. And so there's some role models of people who did that very successfully. And so I think certainly a lot of people try to see this as an opportunity. It's totally analog. It is ephemeral. It is only as good as you want it to be, and how much you devote to it, and how much you dedicate your time. Quality is an issue. And it's zero digital. And so that seems to be something that is extremely attractive to a lot of young people, yeah.
Okay, you heard it here first, listeners. There is no end in sight to specialist food and drink magazines. They will continue to hit our desks and newsstands every month. Mark, there's this wonderful magazine I picked up called Dear, second issue, Think Twice, and it's a Korean magazine. It says a magazine about the forgotten, and it looks at fabric and woven labels and kind of really talk about super specialist also a curious reaction of a magazine. This is just first impressions, but it's so opposite of Korea Incorporated. At a time when we think of maybe four or five brands involved in making mobile phones and televisions and vehicles, and this goes into a completely different place. It's a really interesting magazine. How does someone like Dear find you, or do you find them?
Both ways. normally, it really happens. Who's quicker to make the contact? Sometimes, like for example, with Dear, maybe a customer comes in and says, "Well, a friend of mine does this new magazine, and so it would be perfect fit for your store." And what I really like about this, that it's really like about, let's say, the people behind the fashion industry. It's about people that actually work there and to really make a good piece of journalism as well. Not only like pictures, and so it's really like making aware of the production behind. And it's a I think it's the second issue now of the year. And it's really. It's finding us as well as we are finding it. So
you sort of wonder, because it crosses the line. I mean, it's almost more of a book in terms of its scale. I don't see any really visible advertising in it, and you do wonder maybe in a secret way it was maybe financed by the Ministry of Trade in Korea. You never know, but fascinating to see nevertheless. Robert, what did you? You've picked a couple of things off the show. You've got Aperture there. You've got Damn Magazine. What do you? You've got The Weekender as well, a new edition of The Weekender, at least one I haven't seen yet. Where do you? What do you want to talk about?
I think aperture is something that I'm most curious about, in a way, because on the one side, aperture is so much iconic and so, you know, old school in a way. And I'm very curious to see aperture because I feel especially photography has gotten so much beating over the last couple of years, and photography being so ubiquitous, and you share your photos on the internet and Flickr and all that. So it seems that there is no real sort of quality benchmark for photography existing in common sense for people. So people don't think, why would I want to spend money on photography or something like that? And at the same time, what I found out, or what I observed about myself, is that I used to think about certain events, historic events, through photography. So I remember whatever, the man on the moon or whatever, German terrorism, through photography. And when I come to think about, let's say, the Greek crisis, there's no photo that sort of pops into
that
my head.
That singular image.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's no, and the same, you know, the civil war in Syria or whatever it is. And I sort of miss that. And I think that, in a way, I feel right now there's a little bit of a turn towards a more content-driven kind of photography again, and a more classic sort of need for reportage photography, in the sense that there are photographers really capturing a topic in one shot, and then sort of making people remember a time and an event by these photographies. Mm. And I think I'm really interested in photography much more than I was maybe 2-3 years ago.
I mean, what you've just said there, is that a bit of an encapsulation of perhaps what Gestalten's mission is when you're looking at new books and the types of people you might want to commission or document?
Yes, true. But also what we found, we've done this book Nostalgia, which is these photographies that Prokudigorsky did for 100 years ago for the Russian Tsar, and they're in color. And it was a project that we did with the Library of Congress. And it was so unbelievable, the reaction that it sparked, because the fact that it was in color sort of made a lot of people attached to this photography, and really sort of changed people's mind about, you know, what photography could do for them. And so we, through that book and all these reactions, we really became interested in photography again, and were aware of the potential, and also aware that actually there's a lot of photography archives out there who have great content, just unbelievable content, and they really have a problem of getting the content out and getting it published, because usually photography publishing is a very complicated trade these days.
Mark, we don't have too many minutes left. For our listeners around the world, I see a couple of titles. I'm actually almost going to say one is the K magazine, because it comes up so often. But we can... And there are some others as well. But if you could say, aside from what's sitting in front of you, what's come across the cash desk lately that really impresses you, and also is that people are responding to right now, and maybe even something that marks a bit of a shift in the market for you?
Maybe the Alpine Review, which is quite a heavy tome in the end as well. It has, I don't know, 200 something pages.
People aren't familiar with it. I think we've touched on the show once or twice before. Where does it come from, and does it do what it says on the label, or is Alpine a state of mind?
No, I think there's really, as well, there's some really quality journalism in there, and I really think what it's kind of it's you're kind of like more like reading a newspaper. It brings you to different kind of views. So we had some people buying it that actually kind of complained that it's so heavy and so big that they have to spend so many time with it, but they can't put it away because they actually want to read more and more. And I think this is quite
say? It was therapy. It wasn't so much a complaint. I would say isn't that what all good magazines endeavor to do? But yeah.
Yeah, but it's let's say compared to fashion magazine, it's a complete different approach, of course. I don't know. You often hear that people don't. For example, the younger generation doesn't read that much. It's more like into browsing and stuff. And so this magazine is completely a different thing. It's about reading. And maybe as well, I like very much, it's about reportagen from Switzerland, which is completely about reading as well.
I've actually picked up a copy here. I think aside from also what they've just done from a tactile point of view, I mean, it's this idea that it feels like just that also a title you could take on the road with you, and always a really strong cover. I mean, Briefe aus Aleppo, Marseille baut im Kanal. I mean, just a really wonderful range of stories. And it's interesting that you touch upon also, I mean, these are tomes in many ways. I think so often we think about, you mentioned earlier about just the number of fashion magazines you have, but then also people coming for something which is, they keep beside their bed and they can come back to again and again.
Hmm. Yeah. For example, we have publications like N+1 or The Idler or The Believer. So it's, and we really sell this very, very, a lot of copies actually. And people really come because, for example, The Believer you can't buy anywhere else. It's kind of a bridge as well from the magazine to the book and about reading. This is really interesting at our space as well. So it's not only about pictures, like photography, which is of course interesting.
I think in many ways, a lot of the publications you have here speak more a language of a book. They are just not having much or not at all advertising in them. They're based on a concept, they're based on an idea, they have sort of pursue ideas over several editions, and they're not so much driven by advertising or any kind of lifestyle, but more about concepts and ideas, and that sort of really sort of related more to books or some book compilations that you do around a certain topic.
And I mean, also just incredible level of passion as well, because sometimes I do wonder, without this advertising, either someone has a very big trust fund or a very, very generous sugar daddy.
Yeah, but I think also what we found out is that a lot of people who make magazines actually use the magazine to claim a certain competence in the field. So there's quite often there are sort of branding corporations do magazines, Maker, just these. And they use that to sort of communicate with the customers, and they send it to the customers and sort of want to impress a certain community with what they have achieved when it comes to competence. So I think this is also a kind of a marketing tools, and the business model is somewhere else. So the magazines themselves do not really work commercially, or do not really have to work commercially, but they serve a certain purpose and provide a quality at a very sort of low price point.
I think there's an investigative program to do on that at some point. Gentlemen, we're going to have to leave it there. Mark Kiesling from Do You Read Me, thank you very much for hosting us in this wonderful space, largely furnished by Artek, it looks like. And Robert Clanton from Gestalten, hopefully we'll be seeing you before we have the launch parties for those books that we're doing. Thank you and have a very good weekend. And that brings us to the end of this Berlin edition of The Stack. My guests today have been Robert Clanton, president of Gestalten, and Mark Kiesling, co-owner of Do You Read Me. And he's just passed me a little note here because they're going to be doing a special event with The Plant, a journal about ordinary plants and other greenery, a title we've had many times on The Stack. And it's going to be on Samstag, den 23. of March 2013 at 1900 here in Berlin. And that is, of course, at Do You Read Me's reading room, which is at Potsdamer Straße 98. My producer today here in Berlin has been Don Trump. If you have any comments or queries, then drop us a note to info@monocle.com. And next week, we are going to be coming from our headquarters in Zurich. And of course, you can always listen again via monocle.com or on iTunes. But for now, for me, Tyler Brulé in Berlin, have ein schönes Wochenende. Goodbye.